Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from: a curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. No matter how much you choose to give, you'll feel awesome next time you tune in, knowing that we wouldn't be here without you. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Plus, we have great member swag. Show off your HRN pride with a t-shirt, or keep your hands safe in the kitchen with an HRN pot holder. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's Tuesday, November 14th, 2017, and we've got a special group of guests today. First of all, Jeff Cialetti, one of our favorite authors of beer and spirits and the world of drinking. How are you, Jeff? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on again.
You got a new book out, Drinkable Globe.
That's right.
We've been previewing it, talking about things like schnapps and the Black Forest region of Germany, so...
Yeah, no, it's an amazing place, 14,000 different schnapps distillers, all farm distillers, just in one small region, so it's pretty cool.
No, it's great to have you back, and I love reading your stuff. And,
well, thank you.
It's actually a real special show is Justin Phillips and his whole beer table crew. Justin, thanks for bringing. There's like eight people in the room with us.
Hi, Jimmy.
How are you, man? So the basis of it's a good show because we have Drinkable Globe, you know, talking about different styles of drinks around the world and beer table. Some of your crew, you write a really nice newsletter that I like to read. And this show was inspired by a little article about barrel-aged beers. And, you know, so we're gonna dive into that. One thing that is interesting to me, and I think Jeff is going to agree with me, is that when most people think of barrel-aged beers, they think of, like, these giant behemoths, 10%, things that you don't really want to drink, especially if you're looking for a session beer. And we're going to talk a little more about the nuances of things like what the barrels do and yeasts. And, you know, it's common for beer, cider, and wine, and brings out the best in a lot of beverages. So, Justin, we might as well introduce everyone. You're Justin Phillips.
Hello.
Beer table from around the world. And all your crew just introduce themselves and say your names. And
Hi, I'm Megan Saxelby.
And, like, what do you guys do at Beer Table?
A little of everything, I guess.
People.
General manager.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Amy Stoniones, chef and therapist.
Wow.
My name is Corey Gargiulo. I'm a certified Cicerone.
Gavin Murphy, I'm the operations manager at the Beer Table Stores.
I'm Stephen Bragan, and I work at Beer Table and have an interest in professionally tasting beer.
Noah Levin, I'm assistant to the regional manager. Michael Gallagher. I'm also the other assistant to the regional manager.
So this is kind of like when it's my birthday and they just all showed up.
Does this mean somebody's going to rob you now because there's nobody left mine in any of your stores? Everybody's here.
And then thank you again to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors, supply world-class ales and lagers. Check us out. We're at heritageradionetwork.org. There's a membership drive going on, so check all that stuff out. So barrel-aged beers, you guys brought a lot of different beers. Michael, Steven, do you guys all write the newsletter? Who writes the newsletter for Beer Table?
It's definitely a collaborative project. Megan kind of sources and asks if anybody has any interesting topics that they want to talk about or write about that they think would be of interest to our readers and our customers. I volunteered. I read a pretty interesting article. Hopefully we'll talk a little bit about that later.
Great. So barrel aged. And Jeff, for you, you're covering so many things in Drinkable Globe.
Yeah.
Your earlier book, The Year of Drinking
Adventurously. Yeah.
I liked your article about Scotch versus Irish whiskey. What are a couple of things in this book that we should talk about?
Well, I mean, one of the things really is just in general, kind of local brewing and distilling traditions that the world really needs to preserve. Because right now, I mean, craft beer, for instance, has become a global phenomenon. And just about every country with like a major city, they've got a craft beer scene now. But it's mostly based on what's going on here, the styles. Even countries like Belgium and, the UK and Germany that have their own traditions, they're starting to adopt some of the American traditions, like American IPAs. Like, everybody's making American IPAs now. And part of what I say in my book, it related to, spirits a lot, but also beer, is that, you can get a lot of these familiar styles, but you really need to experience the local thing before it sort of disappears. So you're getting some little movements in these areas where they're trying to kind of preserve their local heritage. And I want to see more than that. I'd like to see more beer and general beverage travelers not just going to these other countries to experience the styles that they know, but to try to experience the type of thing you're really only going to find there.
And you had Lou Bryson give a little foreword.
Yeah. Great. Lou's great, and I really appreciate that he did that.
And he summed it up. He said, "Why would you travel to Chile and only want to drink a Stone IPA?" That kind of sums it up. So that's why there's a whole point to this is Drinkable Globe. We're going to talk about kind of Belgium and the barrel aging of beers. And Justin, let's talk a little about some of the beers that you guys brought. I know your background was you worked with the importer Be United. What is it about barrel aging and yeast that bring out, this special quality of Belgian beers that's different than what they're making in California, for IPAs, for example?
Well, there are a lot of different ways that it can be used, and I think that we've learned through tasting and, my experience, which is not so much on the scientific end of things. It's really just as a taster and appreciator of beer, that it can be used a lot of different ways. And I think that's why we're here today, is to talk about, how maturing and aging beer in wood is. It doesn't have to be used for effect of, adding flavor necessarily, but it can also be used in a lot of different other ways, and Stephen's going to elaborate on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I can go ahead and just dive in right now. So a couple of weeks ago, I read a pretty interesting scientific article written by some researchers over in the University of Washington in Seattle. And basically what they did was pop over to a local brewery. I believe it was Epic Ales, which is, I think that there's another Epic Ales down in Utah. This is not the same one. And I think that this project is unfortunately now defunct. But they took a sample of their old warehouse kind of lambic style ale, and they took just a sample of that actively fermenting. So it's sort of a long-term fermentation where you have just a wild fermentation of beer growing and aging in different barrel types. I'm not entirely sure which ones these were, but they took a small sample of that and they actually looked to see what types of microbes are actually in there, what types of yeasts, what type of bacteria, and they used some pretty sophisticated genome sequencing techniques. There's this large mixture of different bacteria and yeast in there, and sometimes that can be really difficult to actually figure out for reasons that I won't go into. But they interestingly found an entirely novel yeast strain, a species of a Pischia yeast, which is kind of vaguely related to some other ones that are used.
And you guys are nodding their heads. So. Well, so there's a little bit of microbial interplay when you're doing barrel aging.
Absolutely, and that was really what interested me. I'm very passionate about kind of thinking about what exactly the role of these microbes are in different types of.
So when you know when we get like a good Cabernet that goes into a barrel, you know, we have some. I've had really tart ciders that have been put in a barrel, and a year later they're really more balanced. Do you want to talk about bigger picture of barrel aging and what's the point, Megan?
Yeah, I mean, so, and this is something that, you know, as we were talking about before we went on in our last email that we were really trying to drive home is that, you know, yes, one of the points of aging in a barrel that, you know, you can get to is by adding the flavors of whatever was in there to that beer. But beyond that, you know, there's a couple other things going on. So like your example with the wine, you know, the wood is actively working with that beer. There's tannins that are going into the liquid, which can affect the beer, you know, XYZ ways. And beyond that, there's also the interplay of oxygen and how that's going to continually develop that beer, whether it be in a positive way or a negative way. And I think that that's kind of where you get into this mad scientist zone of why barrel-aged beer will continue to be such a fun and, you know, exciting facet of beer drinking, is that there's that really, you know, big unknown area of what the final product is going to be. It's a risk for the brewer, but then the reward can be so great. You can get these really layered, complex, you know, beers that don't necessarily just have to be these big, boozy, heavy, desserty things.
And then, Gavin, you poured us. What was the first beer that you poured us? Because we're going to taste through a lot of different beers that have had some barrel aging, right?
Oh, this is a fun one from Brattleberry, Vermont. It's from Hermit Thrush. This is the Four Stars. Structurally identical to like a wet hop, like a Harvest IPA. But all of their beers are naturally soured via barrel aging. And they... unusually for those styles, they can all of their beers.
Just say the name of the brewery one more time.
Hermit Thrush.
And it's something that you guys have at Beer Table?
Yeah, we've got the Four Star at our Grand Central location and Potweet, another pale ale from them at our World Trade location.
And how many different beers do you have at like Grand Central Station?
Roughly 110 different beers and then six more on draft.
Wow, this is pretty great. Jeff, you know, going around the world, you know, what are some other drinks that are aged in wood or put into barrels that you've written about?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously you get things like Armagnac, which is a type of French brandy. It's different from cognac. You know, it's obviously from the Armagnac region, but cognac's from the cognac region. But there are other nuances, different types of wood that are used. You get different kinds of flavor notes and that sort of thing. And... you're also seeing, you know, obviously things like sherry and port, those get aged in barrels. And now you're starting to see a little more experimentation, too, with traditionally white spirits are getting thrown in the barrels. Like, for instance, gin isn't typically aged, but you're starting to see more barrel aging of gin. And you're also seeing that come over into the beer world, where you've got brewers who are... you know, basically taking these barrels that had gin in them, and remember, gin's a spirit that wasn't traditionally aged, but now it is aged, and it's imparting those botanicals and everything else to the wood. And then once that ages a little bit, gets a little bit of wood flavor, a little bit of color, then they'll put beer in that, and then you'll get some of those gin characteristics in beer. You're starting to see that more. You're also starting to see, even here in the United States, you're seeing people starting to... people are moving beyond... aging beer in bourbon and scotch barrels and moving into different kinds of spirits. You're getting more people aging in cognac barrels, and you're getting people aging in brandy barrels because brandy's having sort of this kind of worldwide renaissance as well. So it's interesting to see that the interest in whiskey kind of opened the floodgates for this interest in all sorts of brown wood-aged spirits, and you're going to definitely see a lot more and a lot more beers being aged in these sort of non-traditional barrels.
Stevens, everyone here, you guys are good. The Beer Table crew, everyone's nodding their head. So, Steven, you're nodding the most. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just nod. And then, Gavin, why don't you give us one more beer while we...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was kind of just thinking about how this sort of different barrel, different types of liquors and spirits can really impact and adjust to different types. I was thinking off the top of my head, I think the Gigantic Brewing over in Oregon had a gin barrel aged IPA, which was the first thing that came to mind when I was hearing Jeff talk about that.
And then other than the bigger, you know, you're talking about these whiskeys and things, but but still, like, going back to basics, let's go back to Belgium and, you know, kind of like using wood to bring out what different yeasts in a beer. Anybody want to go with that? Like things we're talking about, or beer and some of the other beers that we might be tasting today.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting.
Like, why do I need it in wood? Why can't I just have a pale ale?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's one thing that I think I haven't really thought too much about. There's a lot of different media that a lot of different microbes could live off of. Wood is going to have a lot of different sort of nooks and crannies and weird surface areas that are going to sort of generate these sort of little micro ecosystems, basically. I like to think of these sort of complex barrel-aged sours and wild ales as sort of like literally an ecosystem that you're effectively.
So you just
drinking.
Read one article, or are you kind of a scientist too?
Yeah, I have a background
in
microbiology.
Steven is our scientist. He's our official scientist.
So yeah, tell us all the jobs here, man, because you're like the GM. I can tell you're the brains.
Well, for a very long time, I fashioned myself as our scientist. I've got a background in food science, so I had kind of a rough understanding for what was going on, and within, you know, a few weeks of Steven joining us, I realized that I was going to be very quickly dethroned as the resident scientist.
And what about Amy? Because I can see that she's probably going to talk about some of the flavors. And
oh, I will.
Come on in, Amy.
I mean, I'm more in. Oh, sorry, I have to get a little closer. I'm definitely into this from a flavor perspective. My background is food, cheese. Cheese is as complex as beer. You know, I can't get as nerdy sciencey as this gentleman can, but, you know, I can try to for talking microbes and aging.
So what are you tasting right now? This next beer is pretty interesting.
This next one is Wild Creatures. They're one of the newer breweries that we've gotten. I believe they are part of the Be United portfolio. I don't know which one exactly it is.
Michael?
From my memory of what the Be United guys said, is it is...
This is the Meditation
it's a
Reserve.
Husband-wife team from the Czech Republic, and the wife's family comes from a wine background.
Exactly.
So I think they age everything and blend everything in terms of, as you would wine. Same ideas, same concepts and everything.
But you don't necessarily have to put it in like lees from the wine had been in, do you? I mean, it's a little complicated, you know, what happens when you put beer in a barrel.
It is. I mean, I think that, you know, kind of trying to get back to what you were originally kind of pointing us towards, you know, why have we ended up in this idea of aging in wood, and that's like our fascination, and, you know, why aren't we aging in, you know, metal or some other...
Clay amphora.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, to...
Lined with lime.
Exactly. I think that ultimately it was, you know, first probably came about just because that was the easiest way to store these liquids. And, you know, by probably a little bit of luck and a little bit of science, it turned out that, you know, this environment was really hospitable to whatever you were putting in there, be it wine, be it spirit, be it beer. You know, it really had like a positive effect on the beer or on the wine or on the spirit.
I like this beer a lot. It makes sense, right? It's not too big.
No.
It seems like it's got more flavor, more interesting.
Well, I think that for these guys, they're aging a minimum of 18 months for everything that they're doing. So this is a long-term project. They were working on these for a minimum of 2 years before they ever hit the shelves. And, you know, that's something that you see, I think, a lot more with these breweries coming out of Belgium, especially the traditional breweries, and now some of these, you know, New Guard coming out of that region, not necessarily Belgium, but that region, is that they're okay with having stuff just sit there for a little bit.
Awesome. Hey, they're off to a great start here. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
We'll be right back.
In 1996, Sheehan Family Companies, formerly L. Knife & Son, acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn. Union Beer has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Brooklyn and parts of Queens through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten Island, and Long Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education at all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the seven counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here with the Beer Table Kids, Jeff Cialetti, Drinkable Globe. Gavin, you got a little statement here.
Oh, I was just saying, the Wild Creatures we just had, the meditation, is their interpretation of a goose, a very traditional Belgian style. But the fun thing is it's a husband and wife team. The husband is a lager producer. The wife comes from a wine background. But they're from near Prague in the Czech Republic, so I thought it was a kind of a fun segue into Jeff's experience with people reinterpreting beer styles internationally.
Great, great one, Gavin.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the interesting thing about it is there's, I mean, everywhere across Europe, Belgian beers, for a little while, those became sort of the entry point for the budding craft brewing scenes in different countries, particularly Italy. I mean, Italy started getting into the craft thing, they were really sort of focusing on those Belgian styles. And now, like you're saying, in the Czech Republic, they're obviously known for their own beer styles. And, I've spoken to some people that are involved in sort of Czech craft brewing, and they've said that a lot of people, they're afraid, sort of like how American craft brewers were two decades ago. They were afraid to sort of make a Pilsner, because it's just so associated as sort of the national mass-produced style. And I think so, like someone like the Czech Republic is a little bit behind where the U.S. is, and now where craft brewers have sort of embraced the Pilsner style. I think the Czech Republic eventually will sort of get back in touch with their Czechness and start, instead of focusing on IPAs and American pale ales and things like that, which they're doing largely now, and also some Belgian styles. I definitely think that eventually the pendulum ends up swinging back and people are going to start embracing what, put them on the map. And I've seen that happen in other beverage categories as well. In Poland, for instance, there's sort of like this weird kind of hipster vodka renaissance where, after Fall of the Iron Curtain, all these other beverage types started coming to the country, cognac and whiskey and whatever. So everyone started turning away from vodka and going towards that. But then probably a decade or so ago, people started embracing their Polishness again and drinking vodka. All these little shot bars started popping up. They even like decorate the place with like Soviet era kitsch and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think that, I've totally gone off on a tangent here, I know, but
well, that's your thing. It's drinkableglobe.com as well. So you can travel the world with you.
Yeah. But to bring it back to barrel aging, I will say this. I would like to see more people start to embrace new types of wood, because, when you think of barrel aging, you think of oak. But if you go to Japan, when you think of barrel aging, it's cedar. And now there are some people who are also experimenting a little bit here using juniper wood and things like that. So I really...
That's great. So let's just take one step back. So just if you don't realize it, listeners, there's like 10 people in the room and 9 of them work for Beer Table. So Beer Table to me is, who wants to tell me what Beer Table is? Because I'm always impressed with the talent and the products.
That's
you
your
guys
job,
have.
Jimmy.
Oh, yeah.
You have to tell us.
I like Beer Table. They have quite a crew and they are expanding in New York City, but they're still boutique-y and they're bringing me all these crazy beers I never tried. So we haven't talked to Corey yet. So Corey, just quick intro. Tell us like what's your job at Beer Table.
No, I don't currently work for Beer Table. Just hanging out for the beers.
Came for the free beer.
I actually met Justin probably about 7 years ago, right?
Yeah.
At Beer Table Park Slope. And it was my first introduction into beer being discussed on a very different level, on the service aspect especially. I think one of the downfalls of beer and craft beer has been the fact that it hasn't been considered at the same elevation in the service world as something like wine or even spirits. We've seen the cocktail revolution in New York City, especially over the last 10 years or so, and now beer is just starting to get that ball rolling really solidly. So it's been really exciting to see somebody like Justin.
Motherfuckers. Right? There's a lot of people in this room. It's very quiet.
Worked with Justin and Megan.
It's not like the Torse guys.
Right?
We're very polite. We just want to all listen to Corey speak.
No. So I worked at Grand Central Beer Table with Justin probably within the first year that they opened. And having that experience and being able to talk to customers on a very different level about what beer is from what they're used to on a daily basis. And back then, the carts were still around. So it was the difference between going and getting your 24-ounce of Coors Light right in front of the train or, like, being able to have a conversation.
Oh, so you're at Grand Central. They're actually with carts by the
right
train
by
areas.
The trains for Metro North.
Could buy.
That you could buy, like, a
soda,
giant,
beer.
Giant can of beer. And obviously there's not much conversation about what's in that can as opposed to going to a place like Beer Table where the beer lends itself to opening that conversation up. And then you have a really great group of people who are super enthusiastic about that and sharing that knowledge with people.
What's it on? Since we're talking about Grand Central, the typical customer, you know, they're getting on a train to go to like Metro North up to Connecticut or Westchester. How many beers do they usually buy?
Depends on the day.
Oh, yeah?
Depends on the day.
Depends on the day and the train.
Is that a trade secret? No, I'm supposed to know that. Maybe six.
Say, on average, most of our customers get 2 beers.
Yeah?
Yeah.
One to drink on the train and one to take home, right? No?
That's open to interpretation.
All right, who wants to introduce this next beer? You guys are really blowing my mind. There's some really good stuff here. We did a lot of off things. We've been tasting whiskeys and ciders the last few weeks. It's nice to be back to beer. So this next is what, a goose? What is it?
This next beer
is... Who's this guy?
This is Noah from Beer Table.
Another guy who just walked in. Yeah. There's like
guys.
More employees than Starbucks.
Yeah.
Assistant
to the regional manager. This is from Mickle and Boone Goose. It's a collaboration they did. I believe Mickle himself went to Boone, chose out 3 barrels that he wanted to blend into his own kind of cuvee. He selected 1, 2, and 3-year-old lambic aged in Calvados barrels and blend them together. It's a beautiful beer.
Well, just say what the beer is one more time.
It's the Mickle or Oud Goose done in collaboration with Boone.
Wow, that's great. Who wants to talk about that? This style? I mean, it's brilliant. I love it. What is it that makes this different than the other beers I'm usually drinking?
I mean, in terms of complexity, I feel like this Goose and lambic kind of in general... probably, you know, like pushing the boundaries of how complex something can really get. It is an old, old, old style that has, for the most part, stayed really true to its roots. It's all wild fermentation. There's lots of barrel aging, not necessarily for flavor, although in this case it's, you know, Calvados barrels, which I'm sure have lent something. But it's just a matter of time and bacteria and yeast, which is really cool. You're really letting just the basics speak, which is really fun and can lend some really unique
And this is a real,
novel
it's a traditional
flavor.
Style.
Incredibly
This goes back, what, hundreds of years, right?
Yeah. It's not I mean, like... really before they even knew that yeast was doing something, you know? We're talking super pre-science.
So there was a time when people figured out yeast, right? Who was the scientist that... first realized there are microbes and stuff.
That would have been Louis Pasteur, who we can thank for pasteurization.
But I'm going to plug Pete Brown's book, Miracle Brew. You got to read it because I was just reading about yeast, and so I kind of know about it a little bit now. And then, Jeff, for you, did you get to talk about gooses and lambics? And
I mean, I did a bit more in my first book, The Air Drinking Adventurously. I talk about it briefly in this book, but I went a little more into it in there. It was one of the weeks. It was Goose and Lambic was one of the 52 weeks.
And then how are the barrels used in something like this? It's kind of like a conditioning. There's nothing else added to it, right? When you put a lambic into a barrel, it just sits there.
Not intentionally, anyway, I think.
And then you get some wild yeast.
Yeah, you're relying on the ambient stuff to kind of do its thing, and you know,
oxygen,
microbial interplay. And then next, Gavin, keep us going. I'm relying on Gavin because I knew you used to work at Union Beer and went way back to some tastings at Jimmy's Number 43. You guys, what about some backgrounds here? Justin, you've been beer table forever. I've always admired you because you've always kept the highest quality of beer. And I know Gavin worked at Union Beer. Does anyone else want to give us their beer background, or they're just born and bred at beer table? Just come on, jump in, everybody. Noah, the assistant regional.
They're all born and bred.
Yeah.
At beer table.
Yeah. There's an actual birthing table at beer table.
The beer table.
Yeah, what did you do before, Noah?
I worked in finance a long time ago. I was in school studying applied statistics and started working at beer table part time and just kind of got stuck here.
Anybody else want to?
Always there.
Got a more interesting background. Amy, yeah. Are you a chef by training?
Yeah. So originally I grew up in middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. My dad makes moonshine, Applejack, and some homemade wine, so pretty much knock you under the table.
What kind of food? I'm gonna jump in. What kind of food would you be making to share with these great?
It depends on
barrel-aged beers.
It depends on the beer.
Yeah.
You know, as I taste, like, then I can think more about pairings. You know, but the goal with the beer. Yeah, I know.
Gavin, you want to walk us in?
I mean, the beer is really
drinking?
The star. So the food is to complement the beer, really.
So not knowing about the barrel-aged theme of the day, I brought the outlier. This is Saison Rustique from Brasserie Dunham. They're just outside of Montreal. And I learned about this brewery just by pure happenstance while on vacation in Montreal. Very enthusiastic bottle shop owner pointed us in their direction, and I've been a big fan ever since. So this is a Brett fermented, dry hopped saison.
This is my kind of show. These are beers I've never heard of and never tasted. I love it. Justin, you're doing a great job. I mean, what is it like?
Thank you.
What is it? And Megan too. You know, I like the business of beer. What is it like putting together a team like this? I mean,
very fun.
Yeah.
Very fun. We have a lot of different people who all bring a lot of unique but incredibly necessary strengths. Is that, like, nice enough? Am I being nice?
Yeah, all right. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back, and save your words for the show. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio. It's a lively group here, guys. Most of the crew from the beer table operation. And Jeff Cialetti, Drinkable Globe. You guys are talking off mic.
I'm the interloper.
We're tasting all. So, Jeff, did you think you'd taste all these different beers in one show?
Yeah, you know, and actually my glass sort of got up and walked away. So I think I've gotten a reputation, and so I was cut off early. That's sort of
so. This is who brought the beers today?
This one was me, Gavin. Just a favorite brewery of mine.
So you guys just pulled beers off the shelves at beer table?
More or less this time.
Yeah. So you got Grand Central. You're down at the whatever it's called, Westfield.
Oculus. Yeah, in the Oculus.
Who said that? Cock on the mic, man.
We're in the Oculus.
Oculus at the World Trade Center. And you guys, you might have another place too, or we can talk about that yet.
Yeah, it's a little bit top secret, but kind of not. So we're working on it.
So just check out Beer Table. Right?
Check us out in December, and we'll give you new news.
We'll have to have you guys back. Yeah.
Yes, please.
All right. Jeff, Drinkable Globe. But let's just drink more beers. This is fun.
Yeah.
And
I know with Michael here, I saw him standing outside. I had a feeling coming in today there'd be a lot of stragglers. So this guy out front, and I was like, this guy must work for Beer Table.
I was actually trying to finish my roadie. I kind of saw you in the subway, and I saw you with the beer hat, and I was like, well, I should finish this before I go into a restaurant. But yeah, I was drinking the Leader from Industrial Arts, which is a great beer. And it's perfect subway beer, especially if you have a Beer Table pint, which are available in Westfield Mall and Grand Central Station.
So how do you take a beer on the subway?
Very carefully. See, the law is if you get caught drinking on the subway, they can only write you a ticket if you're holding the container that says the amount of alcohol that's in it. So you basically just need a cup. So as long as you're quick to pour it into a cup and throw it away.
We are not lawyers.
This is not something I recommend doing, or legally, Beer Table does not recommend doing this in any shape.
But at Metro North Train... So the great trains that go out of Grand Central, can you drink an open container?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can drink on the train, on the platform, and in the bottom of Grand Central Terminal.
No, are you going to correct them?
No, I just wanted to say, not only can you, but it's encouraged.
And not separate cars. You can just drink in any cars.
Any car.
On any car, as a daily Metro North commuter to Connecticut, it's almost a must.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. Jeff, does that happen anywhere else in the world in your drinkable globe? Can drink on the trains, drinking?
Well, I mean, places are not entirely, they don't really police a lot. Depends on where you are. I mean, they got bigger fish to fry. Transit police have bigger fish to fry. And also, if you've been anywhere else in the world on mass transit, whether it's on a tram or on a subway, most of the time, getting a ticket is on the honor system. Like, people aren't even really checking your ticket. It's like, if you get caught without one and it's not validated, you know, you're going to get a major, major fine. But you could pretty much go an entire week in, like, a European city and not buy a train ticket and not get caught. So I would imagine that there's a lot of other stuff people are getting away with. And also a lot of other places a lot more permissive. Like, there's some places that don't even really consider beer to be alcohol. So it's, you know, I think... again, bigger fish to fry with actual crime and stuff like that. And, like, why are you going to police, like, if someone drinking?
And do you guys sell any, like, of those weird drinking devices? Like, they have that weird camelback for water that you suck on? Like a baby's bottle?
No, we don't.
No. So, like, it's like you have the marijuana paraphernalia. You don't have the, like, transit drinking paraphernalia.
I mean, I think one of the reasons why virtually every one of the tablers here had an answer to the question is it's one of the most common questions we have, and I think that's reflective of the sort of global attitude towards drinking, and it is quite different in New York, and so we definitely have to look out for people.
You can't have a cocktail shaker on the train. I like my beer. Gavin, I'm just keep asking Gavin because he's opening the beers. We've got the Ore beer. That was one. I read your great newsletter today, and it talked about the Ore beer as representing this, you know, balanced approach to barrel aging. Who wants to talk about the Ore beer? And let's taste it, because from Didola, that's another one.
That's a Justin question for
Justin
sure.
Beers.
I could just moan a little bit.
I love Didola. Didola. Our friends would be united. So let's pop that and let's all taste it. But
yeah, let's taste now.
So their approach to barrel aging and why we built the whole show around this beer.
My experience is based on a couple of visits to go to see Dole and to see Chris, and early on when I worked for Be United, and I didn't really know anything about it before I showed up there. I had no preconceived idea of what Dole was or how Chris was handling what he was doing, and. I learned to love it after the fact. This is a beer that I saw him putting a tiny batch of in a 200-liter barrel, and that was it for the year. And since experiencing it then and there, I have hoarded it. And and every year, these guys make fun of me for, like, trying to buy all of it and trying to have all of it.
Give me more. Thank you.
There's, like, the hush-hush reverence for this beer. It has more of the Belgian, like, kind of typical Belgian yeast flavor. I don't know. Jeff, you want to talk about... what, you know, if I said a typical Belgian flavor.
Microbial interplay.
Yeah, I mean, it's I've always been really sort of bad with tasting notes. I've probably used the term yeasty and wild a lot more than anything else without getting too specific. But lactobacillus is not a yeast, but that's a lot of times what gives sour beers their sourness.
This one has like a wine kind of wine barrel kind of sourness.
Almost that kind Steven. Of cheesiness that we were kind of talking about in a positive way, as most yeah. positive as possible.
I mean, if you want to go lactobacillus, I'm here.
Oh, yeah, here. let's go there.
Please. I'm talking above my pay grade there.
Well, no, to go back to what we were, you know, like the whole theme of this thing, that I think this beer perfectly exemplifies the multiple ways that like a, you know, barrel aging can affect a beer. You've got like the interplay of the previous spirit. This has held wine before, the barrel that aged this beer. You know, you've got the exposure to oxygen. So you've got almost that like cherry or sherry kind of like nuttiness from the oxidation. And then you've also got a little bit of some sour notes going on, and a lot of that is going to be from the, you know, exposure to various microbes, be they bacteria or yeast, that are changing the flavor of an already great beer into something drastically more complex.
It tastes like that, too.
Yeah.
But really, I could taste that there had been wine in that
Definitely.
Barrel. Anyone else? Orbeer, Dodola. There's that kind of magic to the Dodola. There's like some kind of export stout. There's a couple other beers that I've had from them, Justin.
I brought you a treat.
Did you? A big bottle. I don't get that much beer. I'm not like Justin Kennedy. He gets all the beer shipped to him. I got to figure out how to get beer shipped to me, but I'm happy to have you bring it to the show. Keep going, guys. I'm, you know, Noah, you're drinking beer over there. And
yeah.
You're like the assistant regional manager.
Yeah. Assistant to the regional manager. And I'm drinking the Orbeer Reserva. I think a fun thing about Dodola in general and the Orbeer, originally Dodola was getting yeast from Rodenbach. I think when Rodenbach went corporate, they stopped shipping out yeast to breweries in Belgium. So now they're pitching their own yeast. So slightly different product than the original, presumably. I never had the original.
Always evolving.
Yeah, always different, which is what's fun about yeast and barrel aging. Always different, always new, maybe unexpected.
Michael?
Yeah, we always have a special place in our hearts, I think, for this beer. I have never been inside Justin's house, but I believe he has every vintage ever made in the back corner behind the dresser somewhere.
Where it is.
Hopefully it never burns down. I would like to try all
that
of them.
That sounds like a threat.
You guys are crazy. So I should come visit you guys more often. I love this beer, Dodola.
It's wonderful.
It's magic, and I'm glad we got to try some other things. Are there any other beers that you guys brought that we should check
yes.
out? It's hard to like finish it, but let's pop them. Let's go through it, and let's at least say what they are so we can...
Jeff, did you bring any beers for us?
I did, but they're not barrel-aged. I brought... they're actually from Iceland. They're from Einstock, which is... probably, I guess, the biggest of the new crop of craft brewers there. Craft brewing's really, really new in Iceland, but Einstock's the best known of those. And this is a winter ale from them. So,
finish with that. That's good.
So, yeah, it kind of brings the whole globe thing, I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
And then, Megan, for you, like, you know, I know your whole family kind of, it seems. It's a very small room here. Some of you guys have worked for Union Beer. Some of you guys, my friends at Saks will be cheese. There's some relationships. Justin Beer Table. You know, how do you see the industry going? And you know, what is it about Beer Table that's so special? Because you guys always go above and beyond.
I mean, I like to think that what makes us special is, you know, and this is something that Corey touched on earlier, is the human aspect of it. We all love beer. A lot, and we want to talk to you about how much we love beer. It's you know, it on paper is yes a transaction, but we also want to like talk to you about, you know, the intricacies of what's making this beer so cool and so neat. And it's not a sales tactic. It's just because we genuinely care that much about what we're selling. So I think that's what makes us really special.
Yeah, Nat. Who wants to recap the beers we had the first couple? Because I can't remember. And go for it, Noah.
Gavin, I don't know.
Oh, Gavin.
Hermit Thrush. Oh, good Lord. We started with the Hermit Thrush. The Hermit Thrush
four stars, the Wild Creatures Meditation, the Boon and McKellar Udgus, aged in Calvados barrels, and then we had the Orbeer Reserva. Oh, also the Brasserie Dunham Saison Rustique.
And that's great. And who's doing most of the buying for you guys?
Mr. Gallagher.
This guy?
And Mr. Murphy. Both of those guys.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Murphy and I buy the beer.
So we think 110 selections, that's a lot, but it's not really, is it? Do you have to really, it's like Sophie's Choice, you have to pick one or the other.
Well, I don't know if I put it quite like that. well, nice. Thank you, Mr. Jimmy. But it's basically like, ooh, I see eight.
I watch movies.
I see eight dark sours, and I want them all. But then you have to, you know, not everybody else loves dark sours because they don't have the letters DDH on them. So you can only buy one at a time. So you have to do a mix between of what you love, a little bit of what you can sell, and then also what you want to educate your consumers on. Because you know a lot of beer is delicious, and a lot of people won't try the beer unless you tell them, no, this is the beer you need to try. Especially in Train Station and Grand Central. The guys there have been, you know, working 9 to 5. They don't want to make another decision. Sometimes, and they have 30 seconds to their train, so sometimes you just got to grab them and tell them, hey, this is the beer you want to drink. Buy it, get on your train, enjoy it, and if you don't like it, tomorrow I'll buy you a different beer. And they like that.
Yeah, just a second what Mike said, it's, you know, a lot of balancing, you know, personal preference to be able to speak personally about, you know, what's on the shelves, but also knowing what your customers ultimately want at the end of a long, tough, you know, stressful day. So, you know, you do have to have, you know, beers that I don't want to have day in and day out, you know. Like Mike alluded to, the double dry hop, double IPAs, that's a once in a while treat for me, but for somebody that's stressing out constantly, yeah, an 8% can of double IPA every day, I kind of get it, but I'd love something, you know, a store that's entirely Brett C. fermented saisons.
But like, but the Poe Tweed and the Hermit Thrush stuff, I think, is really great because, and it sort of demonstrates the sort of, we often have things that are sort of adjacent to what a customer may be more comfortable with, like those sort of more hoppy, wet hop, dry hop IPAs, and then we can kind of steer them towards a, well, this has some of those qualities, but it also is a sour or barrel-aged in the case of Hermit Thrush. And I think that really helps a lot of people kind of expand what their kind of palate is and what they'd consider to drink.
I tell you, this is an awesome crew. Justin and Megan, you guys got to bring back your crew and keep this conversation going. I'm just getting to know you guys. Listeners just getting to know you. Jeff, is there a question you have for these guys about, you know, new breweries or cool stuff that they're finding before we close out?
I mean, I guess as far, not any particular brewery, but if you, like, approximately, what's your sort of local to non-local ratio of what you carry?
Generally, the local guys, since it's so expensive to produce in New York, a lot of them are doing cans on premise and kegs to accounts. So local stuff, we do mostly in kegs on draft and our pint jars and growlers to go. But we have good relationships with those local guys, so we kind of try to be like, hey, it'd be great if we could get some of your cans. They sound really cool. And we can get some of the, I mean, in a train station, you can kind of run through anything local, whatever they have left in a day. So it's, because people are excited about it, people love it, people want it. And a guy that lives in Connecticut and works on 40th can't always get down to other half. Wife and kids, so he can't come in on the weekend. So, you know, if we can get single cut cans in, if we can get Interborough cans in, that saves him a trip and allows him to drink something local, fun, and what they
so
want.
You got to mix it up. And does anyone have a question for Jeff about Drinkable Globe? One last question.
I've got a question. This is Noah, assistant to the regional manager. Jeff, did you try any Calvados while you were writing your book?
Oh yeah, I have had some Calvados. I mean, I didn't actually drink it in France. I've had it from at trade shows here with importers of French spirits and that sort of thing. But yes, I enjoy it very much, and I'm getting into more things made from fruit. I mean, I didn't used to really care much for. I mean, I guess technically Calvados would be considered eau de vie because it's made from fruit. But I'm starting to, you know, especially with my recent trip to the Black Forest and stuff like that, I'm really starting to get into fruit-based spirits. I'm almost moving a little bit away from the grain-based stuff and into the fruit-based stuff. Cool. And, you know, I think Applejack here, too, is actually starting to make a comeback. So, you know, you got Copper and Kings in Louisville.
Brent. You got
it's
it.
A little off the back of the train.
Guys, this is a wild crew. I just want to give a big shout out. Events coming up. This group, Hop Culture, has got a Juicy Brew NYC event on Sunday, December 3rd in Brooklyn. Check it out, hopculture.com. And for those of you interested in what's going on with my place, Jimmy's Number 43, keep checking the website, jimmy'snumber43.com. And the Instagram at Jimmy's N043. So let's go around the room. Everybody say their name, and we're going to sign off. Thanks
Justin
for joining
Phillips.
Me.
Megan Saxelby.
On the Heritage.
Amy Steyos.
Radio.
Jeff Cialetti, buy my book.
Network. Drinkable Globe.
Corey Gargiulo.
Gavin Murphy.
Stephen Bragan.
Noah Levin.
Michael Gallagher.
All right, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy. Justin, great job tonight. David Tadashur, engineer, and we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo, woo. Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.